This is The Thirsty Developer, episode number 52, from Monday, February 16th, 2009. XAML Ninja. This week we have an interview about developing multi-touch natural user interface applications using Microsoft Surface and Windows 7. We interview Eric Klimczak, the creative director for Clarity Consulting, who's also known as the XAML Ninja. Let's listen in. So Dave, today we have a special guest with us. Eric, can you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Eric Klimczak from Clarity Consulting. I'm the creative director here.
That's a fancy title, Eric.
Yeah.
What's your other title? Your kind of nickname, you know, your superhero persona.
I have been called in the field. I've been known as WPF Ninja.
No, you're the XAML Ninja, because it applies to both WPF and Silverlight, right?
The XAML Ninja.
And actually, before we started recording, we talked about how you got that nickname, and that is we were doing a podcast with George Dersey. He was talking about some great technologies. We'll point back to the show in the show notes. You did something with him with a combination of WPF, Vista Gadgets, and Unified Communications, and he coined the term XAML Ninja. It's like, you know, Eric is the XAML Ninja.
Yeah.
And then last week, or, a couple weeks ago, we had Steve Holstead on the show, and he talked about how you had helped do the design portion of Twitter Lite, which is another XAML-based application.
That's true.
And we said, you know, hey, we've mentioned him enough that we need to have him on the show. But you've actually been involved with the show from the very get-go.
That's true. Your really, really good-looking Thirsty Developer logo was done by yours truly.
Tell us about, you know, how you actually created that logo.
Well, actually, it's a funny story. Because I spent a good 4 hours creating this really elaborate eagle, like fiery phoenix-looking logo that was like really intense and it was awesome. And I sent it off to you guys, and you're like, "No, that's not quite what we were looking for."
If I was not mistaken, it kind of reminded me of it had some sort of Polish context to it.
Well, being Polish, you know, it might have influenced the design a little bit. It looked like a Polish flag to some extent. And so I got it back saying, "Well, can you tone it down a little bit? How about just a pint glass?" And I was like, "They don't know what they're talking about." And so I went ahead and grabbed the pint glass, drew some vector graphics around it, got a nice font, and what you see today is the...
So the whole idea is like, how about an old, kind of old Irish pub sign or English pub sign or something like that?
Yeah.
And we've paid them for that, right, Larry?
Ooh, Dave. I've taken a note that we still need to take care of that, but we'll take care of that off the air. Your background is more on the design side of things, right?
So I actually have three degrees, formally trained in computer science, psychology, and fine arts.
You have three degrees?
Yes.
Dave, I don't feel smart enough to be in this guy's presence.
So actually, is it three degrees because that's what you strive for? Or is it
definitely had its benefits being in school. But, ever since I can remember, you know, back taking computer classes in college my freshman year, and you're in the command prompt, and you're doing Linux, and you're open source this and that, and I thought to myself, like, why does this look so terrible? Why does this have to be so hard? It takes such a huge effort to understand and use anything in the computer world. I always thought to myself, like, well, if you just understand what the person's trying to do and you can write the code to make it happen, why can't it look good and act how you want it to act?
Yeah, and that's why you're like more of a true designer as opposed to, and we've talked about this on the show with a couple of folks, the difference between the graphic artist who can do really good logos, you know, really good at color selection, and you can do all that. You know, we've seen your work with the Thirsty Developer logo. But really the distinction between the person who just does the graphics and the designer is you're thinking about the whole process. How does the user get to know this screen? How do they get proficient at it? All those kind of things.
Right now, in the computer world, the technology world, I would say that, you know, we're a little bit behind when it comes to, you know, just considering design and how it plays into, you know, applications. It's a whole lot more than picking out a nice skinning colors, layout. You know, there's font treatments, there's, you know, user experience, user-centric design that needs to be taken into consideration, you know, environmental variables, like how, if it's a kiosk, how's the lighting hitting it? Does it have to be higher contrast for better accessibility? There's so many things, industrial design, cognitively, other than just colors and layout that usually go missed or overlooked. But that is the difference between what is like a truly innovative application with a great user experience as opposed to a slick, shiny-looking thing that really doesn't help you do much.
So how does your background in psychology, you know, affect what you do day-to-day? Because it's obvious what the fine arts does for you. It's obvious what the computer training does. But, you know, how does that angle into
it? So I would even argue that the psychology component of application design is probably the most important one. So a lot of times, it's just analyzing what is this user trying to do? What are their goals here? And if you go out in the field and ask, you know, existing users of, I don't know, let's say like a tax editing application, they're going to tell you all their pain points. They're going to say like, this was really hard. I didn't get this and I didn't understand this. And the way we look at that is just as an opportunity. Okay. Well, if this is flawed, then how can we make it better? If this user is trying to complete this goal, well, then what can we do A, B, and C to make it better? And so that maps directly to cognitive psychology. It's how a person's going to think through a task and their steps and to accomplish that task.
Yeah, I also think that, you know, a lot of psychology is, you know, the art and science of how to study somebody without affecting the results.
Totally.
Right? You know, because, you know, we always talk about the, you know, the Heisenberg principle, you know, that just the very act of observing somebody is going to change their behavior in how they interact with something, you know.
Yeah.
And I used to work for a computer hardware manufacturer, and we had labs set up that were very artificial, but they tried to make them, you know, as unartificial as possible. So that the laptop test, they actually had rows of airline seats where they would actually ask somebody, like, you know, hey, here's your laptop. Go sit down in the seat and do some work. You know, act like you're actually on an airplane, and they would actually, you'd see them futz with the tray tables and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So you try to do as much as possible, but, you know, it's still artificial at some level.
Right. And right now, just applications and in the technology world, that stuff is just rarely done. And, there's been a huge push for, enhanced user experiences and including better looking UIs and, more functional programs to, you know, make for better applications.
Actually, so what do you think constitutes better user experiences? I mean, we hear this term like thrown around, and I know people hate to hear the word make it look pretty.
my personal most hated personal thing is make it pop. They don't really know why it looks bad or why it looks good, but, you know, typically the feedback I get back is, well, can you just make it pop a little bit more?
Okay, so I've got my personal pet peeve here. And I've been dying to ask a designer this, like, because I hear this all the time. I want a clean interface.
Okay.
I want it to be clean. What is a clean interface, Eric?
I would argue that a clean interface is just white.
To me, it's big buttons, big fonts, and lots of white space, right? Oh, wait. No, that's Web 2.0. Sorry.
You know, I don't have an answer for what clean could be, but I would say that clean usually entails just really thin lines, thin fonts, and a lot of white space.
Okay, so not cluttered, you know. They also say I want a clean, simple interface, and it's generally followed by a list of 1,000 features they want in that clean, simple interface.
That's the Microsoft way. Let's try a very simple user interface, but we need to have 8,000 features.
So. Actually, it's only 4,000 features and another 4,000 configuration options.
There you go, settings.
Which you may or may not be able to find, you know. You want to talk a little bit about some of the technology you've been working with?
Right. So for probably the past 3 years, Clarity's made some pretty big investments in user experience on the design side and on the technology side. And the technologies we leverage to do that is mainly WPF with the 3.5 framework, utilizing XAML with us. We do some Silverlight for rich internet applications. We've been doing a whole lot of multi-touch with Surface lately, and now we're looking into Windows 7 with their native multi-touch support.
So you're one of the few guys I know that's got actual Surface experience. I mean, I'll say honestly that I think the vast majority of the population has seen the videos on Surface. And as they start rolling out, you know, actually into, you know, retail locations, like there's one at the Sheraton Hotel around the corner here, more people are getting, you know, the ability to interact with it. But you're one of the, you know, you're still in the minority of people who've actually programmed with it, right?
Yeah, we have two here in the office, actually. I use one just to rest my feet on it, and then the other one I actually develop on.
Okay. So a little luxurious there, right? You know, does the Surface make a good, you know, coffee table, I guess?
No, just kidding. We actually try not to rest our drinks on it or anything. It's a pretty expensive coffee table.
But it's a pretty expensive mistake if you break it, right?
That too. Shipping it has also been a very interesting logistical challenge, getting it to shows back and forth. It requires its own crate, and it weighs 200 pounds. So,
we actually ran into this problem last week. I was at a trade show with you in New York, and I remember you guys were discussing this very issue of making this thing transportable between points A and B. Mm-hmm. So it's not easy, huh?
Oh, it's not easy. It's not cheap either. We have the crate all dismantled in a storage room here.
Nice. So what are some of the applications you guys actually built on top of Surface?
We've done a few. One thing that Clarity looks into is we're a pretty big player in the retail space. So we think about how can we use Surface to create what we like to call unassisted retail scenarios. So putting a big Surface table in the lobby of any type of retail shop, and just because of its coolness factor, people are coming up using it, and how can we use it to enhance that company's brand and actually make them more profitable.
Right.
So we've done a little bit of work with a housewares type store. So we've also done a little bit of work with a local t-shirt company around coming up with a custom t-shirt designer, largely inspired by the Microsoft Snowboard demo. We've also recently put together a few prototypes for rental car viewers.
So, I mean, there's a lot of scenarios you guys have worked on. The question I have is, how hard it was to build these types of applications?
If you ever developed with WPF, I always like to think of Surface as being WPF on steroids. So essentially, you have WPF as your base, XAML, all the good things you get with that, but there's a Surface SDK that adds a layer on top of that, basically, to support multi-touch, to support all the built-in controls like scatter views and all the flicking gestures and the different manipulations you can do, actually makes for a very easy transition if you've done any regular WPF work.
So what's the development process like, though? Because you're talking about a form factor that's a very large screen. I mean, are you guys developing this on an actual Surface, which I highly doubt, or are you kind of have like a little simulated environment up on you running on your desktop?
Both. When I usually start a project, I'll be working with the SDK. Comes with a Surface simulator that runs on your desktop, and it'll actually simulate multi-touch. So if you have a laptop, you can use the mouse pad and a separate mouse to kind of simulate having two contact points.
Yeah.
The simulator actually does a really good job of most things. But then when you put it on the table actually, the colors change. It's a little bit different on the table, so it's always good to test something on the table before you actually roll anything
right
out. But one place that the simulator kind of breaks down is when you're doing really intense gesture-intense applications. We did an exploration on like gesture computing with the Surface, and so doing very complex gestures and that require a lot of fine detail, actually, the Surface simulator can't help us with that, but those are the nights I stay here until 3 in the morning next to the Surface table. Makes for a good cot if you stack them up together.
How do you actually deploy an application to the Surface table? I mean, you sticking a memory stick in, connected with the network? What are you doing?
Yeah, actually, the Surface table has wireless built in. It's also network-enabled, just like a big computer would be. So we typically just transfer the files one way or another, over the network or on a USB stick. Then all it is a matter of dropping your deploy folder or somewhere in your directory structure and setting a little XML file.
So can you actually get like a console application or something or like a Windows desktop up on the Surface table and you're navigating the file structures?
Yeah.
All right.
Absolutely. People have this misconception that the Surface is like this humongous magical box. It's really just a humongous screen with a really complex vision system built on top of a regular computer.
So we're actually going to put a link in the show notes to the product group did a PDC session. And people can, you know, watch the whole session. And one of the things that they actually do in a, that I thought was kind of interesting is they take a stock WPF application and then they port it over to Surface just to show how easy it is to, you know, basically just recompile it, you know, with the SDK, a couple references, and it works. Then they actually go through the process of surfacizing the application itself, right? You know, you instantly get, you know, some of the gestures out of the box, but you actually want, you know, to, you know, enhance it with, you know, things that make it, you know, kind of, I hate to say the word because you're going to get mad,
pop
on the Surface table. What are some of the things that, you know, that you've seen that kind of are paradigm shifts for you when you're thinking about an application now that you can do these multi-touch applications?
A big one is how do you design for, you know, a collaborative application? So typically anything in the past with computer applications, it's a one-to-one experience. And you have you as the user interacting with the application. And now you have people standing on all sides of the table, all leaning in over the table, touching the table. So how do you accommodate like a collaborative experience? So designing an application that's fun and compelling and engaging for multiple people is actually it adds quite a bit of complexity when you're thinking about making something, you know, that's a cool user experience.
And I think that the use case that you're talking about there is that I could be doing something on one side of the, you know, of the device, you know, going along my merry way. All of a sudden somebody starts touching other parts of the device. How do you handle that, right?
So it really
ties. Because you can't throw up a message box and say, oh, only one person could touch this thing at a time.
Right. I actually think the Surface table supports up to like 300 and something contacts. So you can have a lot of little kids touching it or a bunch of adults playing with it. But it really ties back to, you know, the design principles of the Surface marketing team. You know, it's like one of them is, you know, try to make applications orientationless. So don't have an application where you have to stand on one side of the table to use it. You should be able to interact with the application from any viewpoint on the table. But that also brings about a lot of design obstacles along with it. So a lot of times when you design things, you'll have drop shadows or you'll have perspective based on a certain angle. But when you're basically looking at a table, it kind of has to be a top-down view and the lighting is kind of simulated all around the table. So it's kind of like this ambient lighting. And so even if you notice, if anybody has the opportunity to go and actually play with the built-in applications on the scatter view items, if you drag an item from one top left corner to the bottom right corner, the shadow will actually shift as if in real life a shadow would shift if there was a light cast over it, you know.
Oh, above the table?
Yeah.
Okay, so tell us about the scatter stuff, because you mentioned that, you know.
Okay, yeah. So
I think everybody now has seen enough multi-touch stuff that they kind of get that, but so tell us about the scatter.
A scatter view is a control that's actually built in to the Surface table. So actually probably the most valuable and the most widely used control that you get out of the box. And it actually has all the physics to simulate the friction across the table, has everything to make anything that goes inside of this scatter view. You can put a scatter view item inside of it, and then any user control that you derive from scatter view item, you can kind of just toss around the table, and it automatically gets the scaling, rotating, friction, the bouncing off each other, the Z-index reordering. It all comes out of the box. So it actually makes, if you make the default scatter view item look like something cool, like a Ouija board or something, like it could easily be a really cool app, like right out of the box.
Yeah, and going back to the, you know, the fact that I think most people have seen, you know, the videos of the Surface, you know, the obvious one is where they put the camera, you know, on there and the pictures kind of fall out. Is that done with the scatter view?
It is. Well, I want to make sure everyone knows that 99% of the time, that is all smoke and mirrors. So, like, people like to think that you could just magically put a camera down on the table, like, knows what's inside of it. Really, the way that we've found to get around that is if you have maybe like a wireless compact flash card that's kind of tied to a network. And then that way the service table can actually detect, you know, a blob or the shape of the camera or a byte tag underneath the camera. And once it's there, we can reach into a file directory where all the compact flash pictures were uploaded to, pull them and throw them onto the table.
Yeah. Okay. So that's something clear is that if you put your cell phone on there, it's not going to suck your data off of there. There's nothing.
No, there is right. Bluetooth built into the table. So in theory, with Bluetooth pairing, you may or may not be able to pull data off of the phone. But as far as I know right now, there's nobody doing that for real.
Okay. Cool. So let's talk a little bit about Windows 7 because, you know, when we talked earlier, you mentioned that you've done some work with Windows 7 mm-hmm. and the multi-touch features in there.
So right now there's two companies that are producing multi-touch panel screens that work with Windows 7. HP has the TouchSmart PC, which just recently got a driver update that you can apply to the computer and will actually accept up to two contact points. And through C++, you can manage the stylus input events and capture multiple contact down events with that. There's also like really low level stuff in Windows 7, all done in C#, coming through window handles, all native code. I kind of cower when it comes to native code, so unmanaged code. I typically let somebody else that's smarter than me do that here, but essentially, once you get a handle to these contact down events, you can go ahead and do all the same things you would normally do for a typical service application. The other company that produces these multi-touch screens, actually they're overlays that go over humongous screens. So you can have like a 50-inch monitor and have these overlays on top of it, and it'll actually send the information to the computer about multi-touch going on overneath or on top of the screen. I believe Next Window is the company that makes those panels.
So with Windows 7, the multi-touch, you think that's a big deal for Windows 7? You see a lot of applications for it?
It's huge. Right now, I would say by far, Surface is easily the best multi-touch device out there. It's the most accurate, and it's the best and easiest to work with. But, I mean, the form factor is severely limiting. I mean, we have to move it from one side of the office to the other. It takes three people to move it. You know, it would be ideal if I had a wall that I could just interact with. You know, a big interactive wall, that would be...
And Eric, thank you for not cracking the big-ass table joke. We've all heard that one, right?
It is a big-ass table. Yeah, but I mean, ideally, you'd have something more like a big interactive wall, and there's so much you could do with that. And yeah, I could even imagine like news anchors on screen interacting with like a big wall, as opposed to, you know, a surface being presented on the wall or something like that. But Win 7 actually, I see no reason why it couldn't do that. You know, that's kind of like the next step as far as form factors and multi-touch is concerned.
So it's the next morph, and if you look at most technology adoptions when it first comes out, it requires specialized hardware. You know, it's got a high cost to it. Over time, the stuff gets pushed lower and lower into the framework, and also the cost drops also.
Right.
So Windows 7 is a kind of a natural evolution from the stuff that was first launched in the
right.
Surface device.
And Win 7, you can tell they're working closely with the Surface group to make it about as close, the multi-touch support about as close as they can to the Surface SDK. Right now, you have to do a lot of unmanaged code to get it working, but in .NET 4, when they released that, they showed some previews at PDC that, you know, it'll be pretty much exactly like the Surface SDK, which, in my opinion, is like a joy to work with compared to writing unmanaged code anyway.
Right, so it'll actually be part of, you know, the framework itself. So it's,
right.
You know, it's going to be at the WPF stack. So
right.
Do you see, you know, instances where you might have an application that you have the full experience on the Surface device, you know, because it's going to have, you know, a richer experience, but you could see the same application deployed on Windows 7, you know, with a little bit reduced experience?
I actually wouldn't think it would be reduced at all. The only thing that the Surface table has right now that is making it a clear win over, you know, the Win 7 multi-touch panels are it has a vision system. So it has a camera that's doing recognition on tags and things of that nature that go on the table. Whereas these big Win 7 multi-touch displays are actually just multiple contacts that they're registering. So they have no knowledge of, you know, is this a bite tag going on it? Is this a blob? Is this a hand? Is it a finger? They don't know that in Win 7. It's just, is this a contact down and what are the points? Whereas service is actually giving you all that information. The orientation, we think this is a finger. We detected that a flick has just happened. You know, that finger belongs to this hand and that kind of stuff. So that type of information is really valuable when you're writing a multi-touch application.
And pretty complicated, I'm assuming. I mean, my big fat fingers are nowhere near compared to your skinny fingers.
Yeah, you got hot dog hands.
You know what they say about hot dog hands? Big buns. You know, we talked about, you know, earlier brought up your sort of new nickname, the XAML Ninja. So let's talk about XAML. So where are we at with the tooling and everything else to help you build these awesome applications?
I've been using WPF and XAML for a good 2 years now, and coming from a ASP background and being pretty acquainted with the Adobe platform.
Wait, the who? Sorry.
I said it.
We love the Adobe guys.
Because really, what you guys are doing with WPF and XAML is it's kind of like the bridge of where the extreme of those two platforms are at. So no longer are we playing around with pixels to try to get in a line up here and there. Now we're actually interacting with true vector graphics, which is one big win with the expression suite in the entire WPF platform, because now we have these vector graphics which are scalable, lossless, and they map right into the Adobe platforms just as well as they do into the expression suite. So you can even, you know, kind of take existing work that you might have in an Adobe Illustrator, pull it over to design, and then you can have it working in your WPF application, you know, within a matter of minutes.
Right.
Which has made my life really great. And because we're no longer working with images, we don't have these rasterized images, you don't have to worry about things pixelating and getting all blown up and blurry, you know, everything is pixel perfect every single time. And it makes it like a really a joy for myself to replicate my designs one-to-one whenever I go from the Adobe platform to the Microsoft platform.
Right. How many different form factors, many different sizes, like you said.
Yeah.
From desktop to the surface table to a wall.
Yep.
Right. In looking at, you know, the tooling around XAML, I know we're still not completely there and supporting everything that XAML can do with the tools that we have. What is your interaction with the code and the tools like? Are you slinging XAML by hand or are you using the tools? What are you doing?
So I would say that I'm like the exception to the rule here, but I pretty much write all of my XAML by hand every single time, including all control templates, all triggers, data triggers, you know, content template triggers. Everything that I do, I usually write it by hand. I just wing it how I think it's going to look, and about 80% of the time it shows up pretty much exactly what I expected it to. But I didn't start off like that, obviously. I started off doing everything in Expression Blend. So I would just design the entire UI in Expression Blend, and I'd sift through the code and realize, okay, this is exactly what it's generating. Mm-hmm. And once I got a good handle on what types of things it was generating, I'd explore a little bit more. I frequently refer to the WPF Unleashed book as my Bible. I would recommend that to anybody that wants to get started with WPF. But basically, I would sift through all this code that Blend was generating. I'd go ahead and start trying to figure out what it was doing. And over time, I just started writing it by hand. And now I use Blend maybe to nudge something 2 pixels that way or this way or set a margin. But largely, I'm just writing it all by hand.
So you truly are the XAML Ninja.
Like I was telling you earlier, I wear black a lot. I do spring up behind people unexpected every now and again.
Yeah. So the WPF Unleashed book, I've used that book as well. It's a very good book, and it stands out in my bookshelf because it is orange.
Yes.
Right? So Adam Nathan is the author of the book, and we'll provide a link to that in the show notes and stuff. But so kind of going back to, you know, are you using Visual Studio to edit this? Yeah. Are you using Notepad, VI, Emacs? What are you doing?
In a given day, I would say that I have 3 Visual Studios open, a Blend, a Design, a Photoshop, and an Illustrator, and sometimes an After Effects to do a nice ping sequence that I could throw in a WPF as a game.
All right, let's slow down there a second there. 3 Visual Studios.
Yep. Mind you, I have
Illustrator,
like,
Photoshop, After Effects, InDesign?
Design and Blend.
Okay. And what kind of horsepower are we talking? What kind of machine are we working
with? Actually, Kevin Marshall, who's another employee who I think you've had on the show before,
oh, yes.
He very generously donated his machine to me, which we dubbed the Quadzilla. It is a quad PC Intel Mac that has like 12 gigs of RAM and just unlimited hard drive space. So.
The Quadzilla.
And it's 64-bit. So we refer to it as Quadzilla, and it is a beast. And I wouldn't even say you would need something like that to do that. I was doing it on a normal machine, you know, maybe like 2 gigs of RAM, decent processor, lots of hard drive space.
How many monitors are you working with?
I do 224s on average. Sometimes I'll have 124 and 220s.
All right. Are we talking computers here, or are we talking about customizing our cars?
Kevin would argue with me that once you have 230-inch monitors, that there's no other. That's like, that's where you got to be.
That's nirvana.
Yeah. Once you have 230s, there's no way to go back.
Yeah.
I thought like that the first time I used a second screen. I think I had a 1024 by 768 17-inch monitor aside from my 800 by 600 laptop, and I was in heaven the first time I used two screens. So now with 224s next to each other, I'm pretty happy.
Nice. So what is kind of going back to development and such? You're talking about you have the Microsoft tools open, you got the Adobe tools. So where do you start if you're presented with a, you know, we're going to build X, you know, on top of Surface, let's say we're going to build a Surface application for a retail environment. Where do you start? Do you just start? Do you start drawing stuff on paper? Do you start mapping on the whiteboard, cocktail napkins? Do you just go directly into the tools and start mocking things up?
Depends on where I'm at. We're at the bar. It's going to be a cocktail napkin.
Yeah. Well, of course.
I mean, it's going to be my hand. No, I say usually the whiteboard's the first place we go. I get my team together, get them all hyped up about the new thing that we're going to do, and then we just hit the whiteboard.
Right.
We all just draw on it. We all come up with the concepts. We all, you know, brainstorm, and then it's now let's make some, you know, medium fidelity mock-ups. And so that's kind of a conceptualization phase that we'll do to like kind of do a brain fart about everything, a brain dump about everything that we need to do. So at that point, we're usually using the Adobe tools, mainly because the tools are 20 years plus old. We are, you know, they're amazing. You can be very fast in them. They get what you need to do, and they get it done as quick as you need to, as you
right.
can get it done.
Yeah.
Once we go there, I typically take a look at what we're all doing and say, okay, that's not possible in WPF, or that is possible, and we tone it down or we amp it up or whatever we got to do. And then I take it straight into design. I usually assetize any vector graphics that were created in Illustrator, take it into design, and then if there's transitions, animations, I usually wire them up and blend. And then if we're talking about like relatively complex physics animations or particles, or you know, if we're simulating 2D and 3D with the parallax, you know, type of functionality, then that means I'm going to be spending most of my time in Visual Studio.
Right. Looking at the work that you guys done, I mean, you guys done some pretty amazing things, and it's, you know, it's easy to show this stuff on audio, right?
Yep.
Not at all. But is there any particular thing that you guys did or were able to do at WPF, and you just said, wow, I can't believe we did that, or kind of knocked your socks off?
Yeah, we actually did what we thought about this, and we took an item in everyone's workplace. We took a whiteboard, and we thought, okay, how can we use, you know, the NUI concept, this concept of a natural user interface, and leverage Surface and make this something like really, really cool. So just taking an ordinary item and enhancing it with the Microsoft platform, basically. And what we did was actually come up with, you know, a gesture-based whiteboard where you can use your finger, you can use, you know, the tip of a pen, you can use whatever to write on it. And what's one common pitfall of a whiteboard? You run out of space kind of quick. So we thought, all right, let's make this an endless whiteboard. So just using a simple pinch gesture, we were able to zoom out real far on the whiteboard and then just pick a new place to start continuing to draw. Okay, now we thought, well, that pinch kind of becomes a little tedious over time. So, well, what can we do to just toss the canvas over while I'm drawing it? So we do like a two-finger toss. So you just put down two fingers, and I can toss it, and I can continue drawing. And at that point, we thought, well, what's one thing we do on a whiteboard a lot? Well, we end up replicating the same application workflow all the time. So if we're doing like storyboarding, we're going to draw the same stick figures or the same application window or the same phone icon, you know, a dozen times on a board. So we thought, well, how can we make this faster? So we have this idea of a lasso mode where you just go ahead and circle it, and you get a contextual menu that pops up over your thumb, and you can copy and paste, or you can save that, and then you can drag it off and replicate it like on demand as you feel. So that actually increases productivity quite a bit.
That's awesome, man.
I have video of it. I'll show it to you. I'm just not making it up.
All right, we need video. We need video proof. I don't believe you. Without you giving any away secrets or anything, what is something that you would like to see kind of in this next computing evolution, if you will, this whole multi-touch opportunity there, whether it's a Surface table, whether it's Windows 7? Is there something you'd like to see that it's just not there yet, or something you might be, you know, thinking about building?
I would like to see the platform become more capable of doing things that you see a lot in motion graphics. So things that you see in movies with simulated fire and particles and motion blurs and lens of flares. And it's a whole lot that goes
bling.
On.
You want more bling, right?
Well, not more bling, because then every single person is going to come to me and say, oh, put some fire on it.
Make it pop.
make that drop shadow turn into fire or something, you know, like... But the only time I ever feel limited in the platform right now is when, you know, I might see something like a Minority Report, you know, and Right. Some of the stuff in those movies are just so outrageous. And like, the first thing you do is you want to recreate that. And,
right.
You know, writing code, and where WPF and this whole foundation's at right now, it's just not quite where motion graphics is. And I don't know if it's ever really meant to be, but I would like to see, you know, a stronger influence in the entertainment industry come into our world here.
So if you don't want us to say make it pop, what do you want us to say?
That looks like horse shit. Just fix it.
Nice. That's a good way to put it. So before we kind of wrap this up, one final question. Is somebody that wants to get involved in learning XAML, working with the tools, I mean, you mentioned, you know, the WPF Unleashed book from Adam Nathan. You mentioned kind of just open up Blend, mucking around in it, see what it generates, and kind of replicating that. Is this something somebody can pick up? I mean, do they need to learn design skills before they learn the tools? I mean, what do you kind of recommend if somebody wants to jump into the sort of new realm of building these next generation applications?
I'll be honest. If you're a developer trying to create a sexy looking application,
don't do it.
Then at some point you're probably going to hit a wall. I think that there's a lot of opportunity out there to take existing Battleship Gray applications and to make them look slick. If you're a creative person way out there on the extreme and all you do is visualize things in a different way that everybody else does, you know, just pick up the language. Just get started in XAML, because we need more people like you out there to, you know, melt our minds, so to speak.
Right.
But, yeah, as far as getting started, all you got to do is, you know, go on the Expressions website, download their 30-day trial, I think. You can start getting started real quick. There's a community edition of Visual Studio, I think, that's for free, the student edition or something like that. You can hook those up right away and start playing around. If you're creative and you have existing design assets, you just, you know, port them over in Expression Design real easily. Definitely get the Unleashed book. That's like the number one resource. And finally, there's probably my favorite resource out there on the web as far as blogs are concerned is Josh Smith. That guy used to be on the WPF product team, and he has, if you want to know how to do everything and anything in XAML, he even has a great starter tutorial out there. That's the blog to read.
Cool. So with that, Eric, thanks for being on Thirsty Developer.
Anytime.
Thanks for listening to The Thirsty Developer. This podcast is available on the Zune Marketplace and the iTunes Music Store. You can also find a link to the feed at thirstydeveloper.com. For general comments on the show or to suggest a topic, send an email to thirstydeveloper@live.com.
Damn, I'm gonna have to edit this one, aren't I?